You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is our last broadcast before Christmas, so I thought I'd do something a little special for everybody. And I don't know if it's going to work or not. I found out what's wrong with my eyes. It's not that, you know, the other day I told you I got something in my eyes and I couldn't hardly see. And it's not what I got in my eye that's doing it. When Ken brought the Mac computer, when he and Bart were here, he brought an Apple monitor with him. And we switched the Apple monitor with the 21-inch monitor I was using for the PC so that I could see better to do video editing. And this Apple monitor, that's where I'm doing all the website work on. If you've noticed the website, I've done an awful lot of work. Too much, as a matter of fact. And that monitor, something wrong with that monitor. It's really screwed up my eyes. And I'm having a lot of trouble focusing. Lots of trouble. You know, if I bend my head way down and look straight up, like over my brows ahead, I can see everything clearly. And if I move my head up real slow, then everything comes into focus for about 3 or 4, sometimes 5 minutes, and then boing, then all goes out again. So what I'm doing is I'm wearing my reading glasses with this monitor now, and that seems to help a little bit. But what I'm going to have to do is switch that monitor out because it's just not good for my eye. And I've tried, you know, adjusting it and all that kind of stuff, and whatever needs to be done, apparently I'm not very good at doing it, so it's not getting done. But I'm going to try this tonight. I have a beautiful book, which I bought some years ago. It's a collector's edition of the Treasury of Christmas Stories and Poems. And my habit was to read this to my family on Christmas. But you're my family this Christmas, so I'm going to read you some stuff from here, and I picked out some of my favorite Christmas music. You'll never guess what it is. It's what I remember from my childhood, and they are my favorites. They really are. I mean, there's other Christmas music that I really love, like the Christmas song, Nat King Cole. I mean, you know, that's tops. But nothing beats... Nothing in the world beats what you're going to hear tonight. I wish I could play a whole lot more, but you're going to hear three of the classics from my childhood, sung by Gene Autry. And Gene Autry was, Gene Autry, Hopalong Cassidy. I could name a whole bunch of cowboys that sang and did Christmas songs on Christmas, but Gene Autry was always the best. And his songs just bring back the true meaning of Christmas to me and all those wonderful memories of Christmas from my childhood every time I hear them. And so I thought maybe some of you would appreciate those things also. And if you don't, just stick your fingers in your ears and go about your business.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to say. Now the ground is dry, ground is going while you're young. The girl tonight, and sing the same song. Just get a bobtail pail, a bobtail pail, wait for his phone. His feet and his shoes too, and watch him stay and crack your face to me. Oh, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in one horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in one horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in one horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in one horse open sleigh.
Well,
happy holidays, folks, wherever you may be. You know, that song Jingle Bells has been translated in 27 different languages and sung in almost every country in the world. Now, I'd like to do a song for you that I think represents the Christmas season better than any song that I know, especially all the folks in the city.
Silver bells,
silver bells,
it's Christmas time in the spring. Ring-a-ling,
ring-a-ling,
hear them ring.
Once upon a time, there was an old man whose name was Mr. Grouch, and he had lived so many years that he could hardly count them. He was little and thin and bent over and wrinkled, and he had a scraggly little beard and crossed, snapping eyes. He used to carry a big stick that he would shake at the boys when they laughed at him, and he never had a smile for anybody. He lived all alone. With one crabbed old man servant in a vast house, and no one even dared to ring the doorbell. One Christmas Eve, I was coming down the street taking gifts around to some friends, and my mind was full of Christmas. There was a new fall of snow on the ground, and the sleigh bells were jingling. Even the busy shopkeepers seemed to be in the Christmas spirit. Banks of fir trees stood on the corners, and every now and then I passed someone proudly carrying home a tree over his shoulder. All of a sudden, whom should I see coming toward me but old Mr. Grouch, looking crosser than ever. He was shaking his stick at the Christmas trees and scowling at the fat turkeys, and for a moment I was half afraid to speak to him. Still, it seemed too bad not to give the old man the season's greetings. So I called out as cheerily as I could, "A Merry Christmas to you, Mr. Grouch." He turned on me, coming quite close and shaking his big stick in my face so that he frightened me. "A merry nonsense," he snarled, biting the words off short. "You should go home and attend to your business, not go running around wasting your own time and other people's. This merry Christmasing is all nonsense, I tell you. Fit only for children and simpletons. There's no such person as Santa Claus. It's all a myth concocted by idle folk to fool the children." I stood quite still, rooted to the spot in terror lest Santa Claus should see me in such bad company. "You don't know what you're saying, Mr. Grouch," I finally brought out. "It's wicked to deny the spirit of Christmas."
"Wicked or not wicked, I say it again, the merry nonsense to you and all your kind."
He looked so fierce that I hastened on my way without another word. And as I turned the corner, I still heard him muttering, "A merry nonsense, a merry nonsense." And on he went homeward to his great dreary house, and there he found a frugal supper laid out by the old manservant. He ate without appetite and then went upstairs. Then after stuffing cotton in his ears and closing both the windows and the shutters to keep out the music of the bells and Christmas crackers, he climbed into his large four-poster bed, and pulling his nightcap down over his head, he went fast asleep. How long he slept, he never knew. But suddenly, he awoke hearing a strange sound. Boom! It was over near the fireplace, and there was a great rush of falling soot and plaster. Mr. Grouch sat up quickly, scratched a match, and lighted his bedside candle. He lifted it high and scanned the room, peering out over the bedclothes like a strange gnome in his pointed nightcap. He stared at the fireplace, and there, what do you think he saw? He could scarcely believe his eyes, and yet, sure enough, it was Santa Claus, dressed all in ermine and scarlet velvet, red cheeks glowing from the cold, his white beard glistening with snowflakes. There he stood chuckling softly and rubbing his hands together, the jolliest possible twinkle in his kind blue eyes. "A Merry Christmas to you, Mr. Grouch," he said in a deep, hearty voice. Mr. Grouch trembled so that the candle wax dripped on his hand. A Merry Christmas, sir," he said, his voice sounding queer and squeaky, not at all like normal. "Now, Mr. Grouch," said Santa Claus, smiling broadly, "that doesn't sound natural from you. Why don't you say,
'A Merry Nonsense'?
You don't believe in Santa Claus, and I know it. And I've come here this evening to give you back your faith as a Christmas present. Put that candle down. Get out of bed and into your clothes while I count three. My reindeer will be tired of waiting." Then you should have seen Mr. Grouch scramble. He popped his thin legs into his trousers, laced up his boots with shaking fingers. Then he pulled on his great coat and wound his long knitted muffler around his neck, just as Santa Claus said, "Three." "You've forgotten your hat," Santa Claus reminded him, chuckling, and sure enough, there he stood, the funniest figure you can imagine, still with his pointed nightcap on his head. He tore off his cap and placed his old beaver in its stead, just as Santa Claus gave him a great boost that sent him flying up the chimney. Santa followed close after, and Mr. Grouch could hear him puffing and panting and digging his boots into the side of the chimney as he came up behind him. On top of the house, it was all singularly quiet and peaceful. There was snow everywhere. On all the roofs, as far as the eye could reach, and above was the limitless heaven with the calm stars shining out. Santa Claus stretched his arm toward the east. "It was there," he said, "before I was born, that the wise men saw the Star of Bethlehem." His voice was so full and deep that the old man trembled. He looked out over the great city and saw in a thousand homes all the candles burning for Christmas. A group of singers strolling by in the street stopped and began to sing a Christmas carol. And suddenly, the bells rang out from churches far and near. It was midnight, and they were pealing the glad tidings. "We must be off," said Santa Claus. "We're already late. We must be going." Mr. Grouch noticed now for the first time a wonderful little sleigh drawn by 8 reindeer harnessed in pairs together. In it lay Santa Claus's great pack, bursting with toys and candy, and all sorts of joy for the children. One or two switches, which Mr. Grouch saw sticking out on the top, gave him a sense of uneasiness. "Get in, my man, get in," commanded Santa Claus, and they leaped into the sleigh. The reindeer pawed the snow and snorted, and then Santa Claus gave them the word, and away they went. Over the housetops and over the trees, on like a wind through the heavens. The old man clutched his hat down close on his head and shook with fear as he saw the great city glide by beneath him. Past the great houses they went and never drew rein. "They're rich there," said Santa Claus. "They have more than they need. We won't stop. They're untrue to the spirit of Christmas." After a time, they came to a part of the town where the houses were all small and wretched looking. "These are my boys and girls," said Santa, as he drew up on the roof of a particularly sorry-looking little dwelling. The reindeer shook their great horns and their bells jingled. The old man looked doubtfully at Santa Claus and then at the little chimney. "Can we get down?" he asked fearfully. "It's the size of their hearts, not the size of their chimneys, that makes the difference," answered Santa Claus. "I'll go first, and you follow." He stepped in the chimney, and down he went. And then Mr. Grouch stepped in, and down he went also. The fire was out, and they found themselves in a tiny little room, all cold and wintry. 2 little tiny stockings were hanging by the hearth, long and lank and empty. And in a bed nearby, 2 little children were sleeping. They were smiling happily as they slept, dreaming of Christmas morning. Before the empty fireplace, a woman was sitting, dressed all in black. She was slight and small, and around her thin shoulders she had drawn a shawl to protect herself from the cold. Here, there was no holly, no wreaths in the windows, nothing at all to suggest Christmas except the unfilled stockings. The little mother had her eyes fixed on the dead ashes, and her thoughts could not have been very happy, for tears were rolling down her cheeks. "Oh, the poor children," she whispered to herself with something very like a sob. "What will they do in the morning?" She hid her face in her hands and began to weep bitterly. It was just at this juncture that Santa Claus and Mr. Grouch came down the chimney and into the room. "Her husband died 2 months ago," whispered Santa Claus to Mr. Grouch. "And she has nothing in the house for Christmas. No toys, no Christmas turkey, no nuts and raisins, nothing at all to fill those hungry stockings." A large tear rolled down his cheek. Mr. Grouch sniffed and looked uneasily at the sleeping children. "Now," said Santa Claus, "watch and see what happens." While the little widow sobbed on, he took one thing after another out of his wonderful pack. Nuts, raisins, candy canes, a beautiful, great doll with yellow curls and blue eyes that went to sleep. A little railway train, a top, a small tea set, a doll's chair. All the while, the widow cried and the children slept. Finally, several pieces of very nice, warm clothing. Then he proceeded to fill the stockings with remarkable speed. When they were finished, the doll was peeping out of one and the little engine out of the other. Mr. Grouch thought it was all over. But no! Santa Claus reached
far, way down into the very bottom of his pack once more and brought out a beautiful Christmas basket. The fat, chubby legs of a big turkey were standing out amid cranberries and sweet potatoes and oranges and apples and every other sort of good thing you can imagine. Santa Claus placed the basket under the stockings and then poked Mr. Grouch in the rib so hard that it made him jump. "Now," said he, "watch, for she'll be looking up." And sure enough, in a moment, the little widow sighed and raised her eyes. And then, you should have been there to see her. Her poor little face grew quite pink with joy. She gasped, and her breath came fast with bewilderment. She rubbed her eyes with her thin hands. She couldn't believe it was not a dream. Then she gave a little cry, just between a sob and a laugh, and fell on her knees before the basket. Unbelieving, she poked that fat turkey and felt deftly between all the other things until she knew exactly what was in the basket. "Oh, we'll have a beautiful Christmas dinner after all," she said. "Even a turkey." She didn't take a thing out of the stockings, just peeped in and felt softly down the long, knobby legs. "I'll leave them for the children just as he packed them, the dear saint," she murmured to herself. She went over to the children and kissed each one softly. They smiled and wriggled cozily in their sleep. Then she looked over again at the wonderful hearthside. It seemed to Mr. Grouch that she looked straight at him, though of course she couldn't see him, as both he and Santa Claus had on caps of darkness. Her face was shining with a wonderful light of love and joy. Her eyes beamed like two stars, and the room seemed to be filled with a kind of glory. "It's the blessed spirit of Christmas," she whispered brokenly. "Come to cheer my fatherless little ones and me." Then she knelt down by her little bed, and it was plain that she was praying. Santa Claus nodded triumphantly at Mr. Grouch, shaking off another big tear. And Mr. Grouch returned the look tremulously. He drew a large red handkerchief out of his pocket and wiped both eyes before speaking. Couldn't we take off our caps of darkness," he finally whispered, and wish her a Merry Christmas?" "A merry nonsense," said Santa Claus, laughing until his fat sides shook. "No, we're not allowed to be seen. Shh, it's time to go up the chimney." And up they went into the dark night, where the reindeer were waiting for them. Into the sleigh they jumped, and off they started, and as the wind whistled by them, Mr. Grouch said, "Santa Claus, I feel I owe you an apology. When I saw her face..." Santa Claus interrupted him. "If you're ready to admit you were wrong, go out tomorrow and wish everyone a Merry Christmas." Far, far away they went, out over the rolling sea, till they came to a ship which had had to sail out from port just 3 days before Christmas. Down into the forecastle they went, where the sailors were sadly thinking of their homes and spread cheer around until each man wished the other a Merry Christmas. All the long night they sped over the great world, leaving joy behind them. They visited the children's hospitals, where little boys and girls were lying awake, weeping for their mothers, and they quieted them and touched them with joy, and they slept, forgetful of their pain and sorrow. They visited sinful men in prison, and softened their hearts, and they stopped at the homes of the rich and bade them remember their poor brothers. It was a night to dream of, such as no one else but Santa Claus can ever know again. But at last the pink glow of morning showed in the eastern sky. "It's time to be getting home," said Santa Claus. "We can be seen if we're out when the day is dawning, and we cannot be seen."
In a moment, they had landed safely on Mr. Groucher's roof.
"Goodbye,"
said Santa Claus as he politely helped his passenger to alight and to shake off the snow and start down the chimney.
"And remember, you're never to say you don't believe in Santa Claus again. Never in all this world,"
said Mr. Grouch. In heartfelt tones,
"Long live the spirit of Christmas!"
He took off his hat and bowed in an old-fashioned, ceremonious manner just before the reindeer leaped into the air and started in the direction of the North Pole. Mr. Grouch must have slid down the chimney and gone to bed after that, but in the morning he had forgotten all about that part of the adventure. When the sun was high, the old man-servant knocked at the door and reminded him that breakfast was waiting. Mr. Grouch woke with a start. "A Merry Christmas to you, Andrew!" he shouted. The old servant ran almost all the way downstairs with never a word. He thought his master must be mad, for he had never heard him give that greeting before in all his 30 years of service. On Christmas morning, I went out to take some toys to the crippled children's hospital, and there, coming down the street, whom should I see but old Mr. Grouch, a gaily decorated little Christmas tree over his shoulder, the pockets of his greatcoat bulging with toys and candy, and behind him, trooping merrily along, an endless chain of boys and girls, each with a toy and a bag of candy. I stood stock still with surprise and waited for the profession to come up. "A Merry Christmas to you!" shouted Mr. Grouch, his face glowing from the crisp air, and all the children called out, too. "A Merry Christmas!" "We're going to take this tree to some fatherless children," he said. "Would you like to come along with us?" Well, when I found my voice, I explained my errand, and quick as a wink, Mr. Grouch said they would stop at the hospital, too, on the way to the other children. And so on we went, all together, and everybody smiled and beamed and echoed our joy as soon as they saw us. It must have been merely my imagination, but Mr. Grouch's voice sounded to me just like Santa Claus's, as he wished everybody, "Merry Christmas." He spent the whole day going round from one poor family to another, taking them toys and good cheer and leaving joy everywhere behind him. Now, the most curious part of the story is yet to come. For would you believe it? Mr. Grouch has grown quite fat and jolly as time has gone by until now. If you saw him, except for his black coat, you would think he was Santa Claus. He has round red cheeks and a shining white beard, and his eyes are no longer cross and snapping. They beam upon everyone the whole year round, as if they were always saying, "I wish you a Merry Christmas." All of which goes to prove that Santa Claus is just as real as we think him. For each one of us can show by our own deeds and words the reality of the spirit of Christmas.
You know Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen. But do you recall the most famous reindeer of all? Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny nose. And if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows. All of the other and call him names. They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer game. Then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say, Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight? Then how the reindeer love him. How the reindeer loved him as they shouted out with glee. Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer, you'll go down in history.
Did make history. This was the story of an underdog who came through with flying colors and brought happiness to millions of children and grown-ups alike all over the world. Well, here's a song especially for all of you kids. Maybe you'd like to pull up a chair and help me sing it. What do you say?
You better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list and checking it twice, gonna find out who's naughty and nice. Santa Claus is coming to town. He knows when you're asleep, he knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been good or bad, so be good for goodness sake. Oh, you better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa Claus is coming. Santa Claus is coming.
You know, bells have always been associated with Christmas. Well, how can we think of Christmas and Santa Claus without his sleigh? Put them both together and what have you got? Sleigh bells.
Sleigh bells jingling, jing, jing, jingling, everything's all right. What a happy sight. Santa's busy as a bee tonight. Oh, sleigh bells jingling, jing, jing, jingling, Christmas trees aglow. Holly and mistletoe, and the whitest kind of snow. All the kitties are sleeping as he rides through the sky. But there must be no peeping, or he might pass you by. Sleigh bells jingling, jing, jing, jingling, Santa's on his way. Hear the sleigh bells say, a happy Christmas day. Jingling, jing, jing, jingling, everything's all right. What a happy sight. Santa's busy as a bee tonight. Oh, sleigh bells jingling, jing, jing, jingling, Christmas trees aglow. Holly and mistletoe, and the whitest kind of snow. All the kitties are sleeping as he rides through the sky. But there must be no peeping, or he might pass him by. Sleigh bells jingling, ding, ding, jingling, Santa's on his way. Hear the sleigh bells say, a happy Christmas day. Hear the sleigh bells say, a happy Christmas day.
"'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced through their heads. And Mama in her kerchief, and I in my cap, had just settled our brains for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters, and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below, when, what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer, with a little old driver, so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles, his coursers they came, and he whistled, and he shouted, and he called them by name.
Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, oh, Comet on Cupid, on the Donder and Blixen.
To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall. Now dash away, dash away, dash away all. As dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky, so up to the housetop the coursers, they flew with the sleigh full of toys and St. Nicholas too. And then in a twinkling, I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning round, down the chimney, St. Nicholas
came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled! His dimples, how merry! His cheeks were like roses. His nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard on his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke, it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him, in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk and laying his finger aside of his nose and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to the team, gave a whistle, and away they all flew, like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim, ere he drove out of sight,
"Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night."
I don't think any Christmas album would be complete without telling in song the most beautiful, inspiring story ever told, the story of Christmas. And so it was that on this silent, holy night of nights, a mother named Mary gave birth to the beloved baby Jesus. That was almost 20 centuries ago. Yet every year on Christmas Day, we celebrate the anniversary of the birth of our Father in heaven. The power and the glory forever and ever.
Joy to the world. a jolly, happy soul, with a corncob pipe and a button nose, and his eyes made out of coal. Frosty the Snowman made the children laugh and play, and were they surprised when before their eyes he came to life that day. There must have been some magic in that old silk hat they found, for when they placed it on his head, he began to dance around. Oh, Frosty the Snowman was alive as he could be, and the children say he could laugh and play just the same as you and me. Frosty the Snowman knew the sun was hot that day, so he said, let's run and we'll have fun before I melt away. So down to the village with a broomstick in his hand, running here and there all around the square, saying, catch me if you can. He led them down the street to town, right to the traffic cop, and he only paused a moment when he heard him holler stop. For Frosty the Snowman had to hurry on his way, but he waved goodbye, saying, don't you cry, I'll be back again someday. Thumpity thump, thump, thumpity thump, thump, look at Frosty go. Thumpity thump, thump, thumpity thump, thump, over the hills I go.
In the bleak midwinter, frosty wind made moan. Earth stood hard as iron, water like a stone. Snow had fallen, snow on snow, snow on snow in the bleak midwinter long ago. Our God, heaven cannot hold him, nor earth sustain. Heaven and earth shall flee away when he comes to reign. In the bleak midwinter, a stable place sufficed the Lord God Almighty, Jesus Christ. Enough for him whom cherubim worshipped night and day, a breast full of milk and a manger full of hay. Enough for him whom angels fall down before, the ox and ass and camel which adore. Angels and archangels may have gathered there, cherubim and seraphim thronged the air, but only his mother in her maiden bliss worshipped the beloved with a kiss. What can I give him, poor as I am? If I were a shepherd, I would bring a lamb. If I were a wise man, I would do my part. Yet what I can, I give him. Give him my heart.
Here's a year and lots of fun. Long night. galloping, 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 galloping.
Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, Vixen, Comet, Cupid, Donner, Blitzen, over the moon so bright. 32 feet and 8 little tails of twine. Hurry, hurry, hurry to the
galloping, 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 galloping.
Old Frank makes you work so quickly, leaving toys for girls and boys in over the roof so high. 32 feet and 8 little tails they fly. Faster, faster, faster through the sky. Look at them go. Santa's laughing. Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, Vixen, Comet, Cupid, Donner, Blitzen, over the garden wall. 32 feet and 8 little tails in all. See them canter, hear old Santa call. Merry, merry Christmas to you all. Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, Vixen, Comet, Cupid, Donner, Blitzen, over the garden wall.
32 feet and 8 little tails in all.
Even canter, dear old Santa Claus.
Merry, merry Christmas to you all.
The story of Christmas. The same story of Christmas that's been told for over 2,000 years. But after all, if you're still a kid like me, you never grow tired of hearing it again and again. So, hey, wait a minute. Jimmy?
Yes, Uncle
Jim? I think you'll be able to hear much better if you climb up here on my lap. So, what do you say, huh? That's it. You come. Now, all set?
All set.
Good. Here we go. Once upon a time, oh, many, many years ago, there lived a man named Joseph and his wife, whose name was Mary, and they lived in the city of Galilee.
Crystal Rock, Uncle Jim?
No, Jimmy, I'm afraid it's a little further away than Crystal Rock. In fact, it's clear over on the other side of the world.
Gosh, that's a long way, isn't it? Even farther than Granny's house in Chicago.
Yeah, sure is, son. Much farther. Anyway, one day Mary and Joseph decided to take a trip, just like you do in the summer with your Uncle Smokey.
Were they going fishing like me and Uncle Smokey do?
No, Jimmy. They were going away for a different reason. They were going into the city to pay their taxes.
What is taxes, Uncle Jim?
Well, son, taxes are money that grown-up folks paid Uncle Sam. Only back in those days, they paid their money to a king instead.
What does Uncle Sam do with the money?
Oh, it's used for lots of things, Jimmy. Like building parks and bridges and roads. Some of it even goes to pay people like Miss Simpson, the teacher down at your school.
Does that cost more than 50 cents, Uncle Jim?
I should say it does, son. Quite a bit more than 50 cents. Anyway, one day, Mary and Joseph picked up all their belongings, put them on their donkey, and started off. You see, in those days, people didn't have automobiles.
Did the donkey look like Champion?
Why, yeah, Jimmy, I guess he did. Except that maybe his ears were a little longer, and his legs a little shorter.
Gosh, would he go as fast as Champion?
Oh, I doubt that. You see, he was pretty well loaded down with bundles. Besides, donkeys aren't meant to go as fast as horses. That's why it took Mary and Joseph several days to make their trip. But then finally one night, in the distance, they saw the city of Bethlehem.
Oh,
fellows that were tired when they got to Bethlehem. So they went to the inn to get a room. But there were no rooms.
I bet if we had lived over there, they could have stayed with us. Couldn't they, Uncle Jim?
Oh, you bet they could.
And they could have put their donkey in our barn, too.
They sure could. But what do you think happened?
What?
Well, sir, just a few nights later, Mary and Joseph became the mother and daddy of a little baby boy. But since they had no place to stay, their little boy was born in a manger.
What's a manger, Uncle Jim?
Well, son, a manger is sort of like a trough in a barn. Only this manger was in a cave.
Did it have a hayloft and stalls and everything?
No, I'm afraid this one didn't.
How did Miss Mary and Mr. Joseph keep the little baby warm?
Oh, they just bundled him up in blankets. Of course, his mother stayed close to him, too. But then, that very first night, a most strange and wonderful thing happened.
What?
Well, sir, at the exact same time Mary and Joseph were watching over their little baby in the manger, there were lots of shepherds out in the field guarding their sheep.
What was the wonderful thing that happened?
Well, while the shepherds were watching their sheep, they looked up at the sky. And there, right before their very eyes, the sky seemed to get brighter and brighter. And the shepherds were afraid.
Did they think it was going to storm?
Oh, they didn't know what to think, Jimmy.
God, what'd they do?
Well, that's when the wonderful thing happened. All of a sudden, an angel appeared before them and spoke to them.
What's an angel, Uncle Jim?
Well, son, let's see. Remember when you used to get dirty in that old mud hole out in the back of your house?
Well, folks, my Christmas gift to you is a chance to sit with your family right now and finish that story. Henry Van Dyke once said, "There's a better thing than the observance of Christmas Day, and that is keeping Christmas. And if you can keep it for a day, why not always?" Merry Christmas. God bless us, everyone, and I hope you all have a very, very